Hey everybody, welcome to a really fun episode of Back to School with Maz Jobrani. Today we have Mike Aponte. He's a gambling expert, data scientist, and entrepreneur. You guys probably know him because the movie 21, which was about the MIT blackjack team, was based on his story. This guy made millions of dollars with his MIT classmates counting cards in blackjack. The story's amazing. He's amazing. He's here today, first of all, to teach us a little bit, the basics about how you count cards when you play blackjack. Secondly, he's going to tell us how no matter what you do in life, you got to try and enjoy the process, stay in the process, believe and trust in the process. And lastly, he's going to tell us card counting and possibly making millions of dollars doing it is not illegal. That and more right now on Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Maz Jobrani, hey, Jobrani Maz, oh, Maz Jobrani,
hey, Jobrani,
Mazzy Mazzy, oh, Maz,
hey.
I got a podcast, oh,
Back to School, yeah.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to Back to School with Maz Jobrani. I am Maz Jobrani. This is my co-host, Tehran. How are you, T?
I'm great. Can't wait for today's episode.
Guys, you know, we've had political conversations, we've had scientific conversations, we've had entertainment, we've all kinds of conversations. This is one of my favorites because I met Mike Aponte, the movie 21, there was also a book called Bringing Down the House, was based on him and his team's story. These guys were at MIT, they put together a card counting team where they would go to blackjack casinos around the country and they play blackjack and they would count cards until they could gain an advantage, and then they would bet big and win millions of dollars. They won millions and millions of dollars to the point where the casinos banned them. And the movie's interesting, you know, but his real life story is even more interesting. The book is interesting, and just learning the skill is interesting. I've been trying to learn the skill myself. When I go to the casinos, one of the games that I do play is blackjack, because I talked to Mike about this before, and really, at a casino, blackjack is the only game that the player can gain an advantage on the casino. The rest of the games, the casino has the advantage and they will always have the advantage. But blackjack, if you're able to count the cards, you can gain an advantage and actually win some more money, and it's legal. Tehran, do you play blackjack? Have you ever tried counting cards?
I don't really play blackjack. When I do, I don't really gamble other than the only game I played at a casino is poker. I'm a poker player. I feel like Persian culture loves cards. I don't know why that's like a part of our culture. We get in it young, you know, whether it's rummy or sarbaz, pasur, hook. Like, I'm a hook god, you know? Yeah. So games like spades, and also in the black culture, playing cards is a, you know, spades and all these games, tonk, all these games. So I just love playing cards, but I don't generally play blackjack. However, I do have a basic understanding of card counting and I try to apply it. And I don't know if it's real, but I feel like it's real enough that I win a lot in blackjack.
Listen, when I do play. I want you to go to MikeAponte.com, Mike, A-P-O-N-T-E.com. Just check it out. It gives you some basic strategies on what to do when you're playing blackjack. Basically, you got to like start at the beginning of the deck and then you count, and lower value cards have a certain value to them. Higher value cards have a certain value. You keep that track in your head. And eventually, once you go, oh, wow, I got some good cards coming my way, you bet a little bit more than you were betting. And the odds are you're going to win. I'm going to try it. See what happens. Now, I'm not trying to win millions. If I win like a few hundred bucks, I'm happy. I get out of there, go have a nice steak, a little glass of wine. Bada bing, bada boom. It's a party. You know what I'm saying, Tehran?
I'm down. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.
Let's go talk to Mike. This is a really interesting episode. It's a little longer than the normal ones, but you guys are going to love it. Also, tell your friends, if you're listening to this, please share it with one person. If you're watching this, just send a link to somebody. So you got to check this out. You can run, you can cook dinner and listen to this and learn something. Tehran, how do people find you?
I am Tehran all across the board. And of course, touring with Maz Jobrani.
I am at Maz Jobrani across the board. Send me a message on Instagram. Let me know you're listening to this and catch us on tour. We're going to be in Washington, D.C. mid-March. Then we go to Surrey, Canada, Vancouver, Canada, Calgary, Burbank, Toronto, Ottawa, you name it, we'll be there. MazJobrani.com for all the dates. Let's now go talk to Micah Ponte on Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Back to school, yeah.
Mike Aponte, welcome to Back to School with Maz Jobrani. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for taking the time. Gambling expert, data scientist, and entrepreneur, Mike Aponte. Let's go to Dara's question for you, sir. I showed him your Wikipedia, told him a little bit about what you were known for. Here you go.
Hi, Mr. Aponte. I have a question for you. What's the most money you've won in one sitting while counting cards?
Allegedly.
Supposedly. Yeah. Off the record. It's in one sitting. You know, with back in my gambling days, myself and the MIT card counting team, we kind of like to look at things through the lens of like how much we won in a weekend. So the most I ever won in a weekend was about 220,000. And then the most our team, because we would actually look at it more from a team standpoint, right? Because we kind of, in a sense, we were like a mutual fund, you could say. But the most our team ever won in a weekend was a big Super Bowl weekend over Vegas. We won $500,000.
Holy moly. Now, before I get into kind of the nuts and bolts of how all this stuff worked, when you guys win $500,000 in a weekend, are you hitting multiple casinos? And at what point do you know, as the famous Kenny Rogers, you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away? So at what point do you go, okay, I've won whatever, X amount of dollars. I need to walk away before they figure out that I've been counting cards. How did that all work?
Yeah, so when it comes to like high stakes professional blackjack card counting, the art of the game is just as important as the science. Like the science is the foundation. That's what gives you the actual mathematical edge, provided you execute the system. But you guys know in real life, there's always the science of things, but then there's the art of it, like being able to apply it well. And so it's one thing, like for a card counter, if they're playing individually and they're betting up to a couple $100 a hand, it's not that hard to fly under the radar, but you know, our team, we're betting up to table max, like $5,000-$10,000 a hand. And so that draws in money, big money in life always draws more scrutiny for everyone. So yeah, the art was really important. As far as that weekend, we were playing at multiple casinos, multiple big players putting out the money. And each big player would actually play at multiple casinos because there's three shifts on each during the in operation for a casino. And you want to hit the different shifts to kind of limit exposure because it's different personnel. But yeah, to your point, Maz, there is kind of a threshold where you're like, okay, I've won X amount. Maybe I'll kind of back off here and focus on, well, ideally a casino where the variance hasn't gone your way and you might be down. So that's, you kind of learn that over time, like what those thresholds are. They're gonna vary based on the casino and also based on the weekend, like what's going on. So obviously on a Tuesday afternoon, it's gonna be a much, much lower threshold versus Super Bowl weekend where you have a lot of like high rollers betting just as much, if not more money than we were.
So take us back real quick, because anybody who's seen the movie 21 and the book was called Bringing Down the House, that was based on your guys' MIT blackjack team. By the way, I like Bringing Down the House better than 21. They should use that title for the movie. But when you watch the movie, you got this guy walking around. He's at MIT. He's a mathematical genius, and he gets recruited, and they show him, we're a card counting team. And come count cards with us. We're going to make millions of dollars. Tell us your experience of how you got involved. Like where, because I also want to know like how much of it is, you know, is fictionalized in the movie and how it goes about. And had you played, were you into cards before you got into the MIT blackjack team? Or what's your story of how you ended up there?
And also, you're not as white as the guy on 21. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, there's all of that. There's all of that, which we'll dive into all of that. But yeah, as far as my background with cards, like people are often surprised that growing up, I never was into card games. It wasn't that I disliked them. There was this other things that I liked a lot better. Like my brother and I were really into sports and doing well in school. So
you
I
played
think-
on the, you, sorry to interrupt, you played on the MIT football team. Is this true?
Yeah, believe it or not, that's, people are shocked to find out MIT. Actually, my freshman year at MIT was the first year that the football team went officially Division III. I mean, before that, it was like a club team. So I was surprised. There were now there's different levels to everything, right? Like, but the athletes at MIT are better than people would think, the people that actually play. And they were better than I thought. Now, obviously, completely different league from Division One, you know, big time Division One, and a completely different galaxy from pro sports. But yeah, there's definitely some guys who could, guys and girls who could play. So yeah, it was a lot of fun, kind of playing there. But obviously, I didn't go to MIT to play football or. Right. With the idea of becoming a professional gambler, because the main reason, I didn't even know that was a real possibility. So my only reference point, not having played cards before, and like most people, I didn't know anything about card counting. My only reference point was the movie Rain Man, which yes. I actually watched for the first time when I was in college. And you guys, I don't know, Tehran, if you've watched it. I'm sure Maz, you've definitely watched it.
Of course. My flag boy and your flag boy sitting by the fire. That song's in there. That's
awesome movie. But what's funny is that I watched it the second time about 5-6 years later with the MIT card counting team. We watched it together with a completely different reference point. And then it was really funny. There were just certain things that were not represented accurately at all. It still doesn't take away from the movie for me, because it's such an awesome movie. But for example, like it does give you the impression that you have to have a photographic memory, right, to count cards. Yeah. That's one of the most common misperceptions. So I have a good memory, but I don't have a photographic memory. Also, that Rain Man gave you the perception that card counting was illegal, which that's really common. Even today, whenever I it kind of irks me some whenever I see card counting represented either on streaming TV, it's always implied or even explicitly stated that it's illegal. But card counting is and always has been 100% legal.
Mike, that's how I feel whenever they show Middle Easterners in film or television, it's always a terrorist. I'm like, we're not terrorists. Show the good side. And so what you're saying is card counting, let's say it now, it's not illegal. However, if the casinos find out you're doing it, they give you the boot, right?
Yeah, they can, just like if you were to have a party at your house, you can uninvite any guest at any time. You don't even need to have a reason, right? It's private property. So even though a casino is open to the public, it's still technically private property. So they can ask you not to play. They still have to pay you, right? Because you won that money legally. They certainly don't have the right to detain you or have you arrested. Although, you know, there were those times where we'd be dealing with less educated casino personnel, particularly security guards, who actually in their minds thought it was illegal, where they kind of, you know, pushed the envelope a bit when dealing with us. So yeah, so many misconceptions about not just card counting, but gambling in general. So kind of fast forward a little bit from when I first saw Rain Man, it was beginning of my senior year, a good friend of mine named Josh, he kind of pulled me aside and he told me that about this card counting team that he had joined. So as you can imagine, like, I didn't even know what to make of what he was saying. Like, I knew he was being serious, but I'm like, what is this? Like, card counting, and it can be a team activity. Like, what's going on? But naturally, I was really intrigued. So I agreed to go to my first team meeting. And it was held in this classroom at MIT. And when I walked in, they had like a mock casino set up. It was, they just had the blackjack, multiple blackjack felt set up on different tables with the cards, you know, chips and discard tray. And then Josh introduced me to one of the managers of this team. And then his name was JP, and he began to explain to me the system of card counting, which, like most people, I had no idea what it was. But then very quickly, you know, being a math guy, not that you have to be a mathematician to understand it, it's quite simple. I mean, you actually, in our time together, right, you might have been surprised at how simple it is in a sense.
Yeah.
But I quickly realized, like, wow, this is legitimate. It's like, and it actually goes way back to the early 1960s when it was actually a professor at MIT that formulated card counting. And then he published it in a book called Beat the Dealer. So I think it's only fitting that some, you know, decades later that a card counting team, an infamous one, would be born at, you know, MIT.
Did that professor go on to make a lot of money? I'm always curious, like these people who write the books and all this stuff, did they actually end up going and doing it?
He ended up doing it, but he was a true academic and scientist. So first of all, he did it in his spare time, just purely out of intellectual curiosity. And then once he had the system, the only reason he played was, like any good scientist, you have to verify, right? You have to experiment and verify the results, which it did bear out to be profitable. But then unlike the three of us, right? If any of us had figured out this system, we would have kept the secret, right? And like really milked it. But being an academic, he, instead of like keeping it a secret and you know, planning to make a lot of money out of it, what did he do? He published it in a book called Beat the Dealer. What's interesting is that it completely changed. It had a big impact in Vegas in a couple ways. Like one, at that time, blackjack was not popular. Like most people don't know this. Like people didn't really play blackjack. Like craps was the big game of choice. But then as soon as the public found out that it was possible to beat blackjack, they began to play 21. Now, of course, they didn't take the time to actually learn how to play it, right, on a professional level. But by the time, by the end of the 60s, blackjack had supplanted craps as the most popular table game. So it's kind of ironic that casinos owe the popularity of blackjack to card counting. That was kind of what put it in the mainstream.
And back then, was it, because obviously in the movie they allude to a little bit, you alluded to it a little earlier, at what point, because was the mob, when the mob was running the casinos, if they found people counting cards, would they pull them into a back room and break their knuckles and kneecaps and stuff like that? Was that actually happening?
I think, you know, I think there might have been some of that. Certainly, you know, if you're doing anything that was clearly illegal, like cheating, like in the movie Casino, right? The famous scene where the guy gets his hand broken. You know, in that case, he wasn't card counting. He was doing something else. But I think there might have been a few incidences, but I don't believe that was like the norm. The funny thing is, like casinos, they didn't really know what to do. They didn't understand card counting. So at that time, like blackjack was all single deck. And so this is another thing that's really interesting. Like, why is blackjack now primarily six decks, in some cases eight decks? Well, the whole origin is that the casinos, once they learned about card counting, they added a deck. They made some of the games, instead of single deck, double deck, because in their minds, they mistakenly believed that it would make it harder to count cards, but it actually doesn't. It doesn't make it. But they just kept adding more decks, which is, I find so funny, right? Thinking, oh, it's going to make it harder, because like we talked about at the top of our conversation, you're not memorizing cards. It doesn't make it any harder to count cards, whether you're playing single deck, double deck, six deck. But
give us a crash course. So I'm also trying to continue this image of what happens. So you go to this little mock classroom mock blackjack table. You start seeing what's going on. If someone's listening right now and they go, oh, I'm curious to find, how does card counting work? And then how does it play into multiple decks? Just give us a quick little tutorial on that, if you would. You taught me before, but I want the audience to hear this too.
Sure. Well, what makes blackjack so special? It's the only game in which it's possible to beat the casino app to gain a long-term advantage. And the reason is that in blackjack, the game has a history, so to speak, that can be tracked, right? So as the cards come out in blackjack, they give you information about the cards that remain. So very different than roulette. Like every time you spin a roulette wheel, it's a brand new ball game. Like where the ball has landed in the past is completely irrelevant as far as where it's going to land next. But in blackjack, if we were to take like a single deck obviously has four aces. And if in the first round, all four aces were to come out, then the probability of getting blackjack the next round would be zero, right? Because there's no more aces. And so that obviously would be a bad time to bet like more money. So that simple kind of illustration shows you that the odds in blackjack are constantly moving up and down. Now, most of the time they're in the house's favor, of course, right? That's why they offer the game to make money. But there will be select opportunities where the advantage moves into the player's favor. And those opportunities occur when the remaining cards are really rich in the high cards, tens, jack, queens, kings, and aces, right? Because those high cards, those are what give us blackjack. That's like 150% return, that 3-2 payoff. And also when we're doubling down and splitting, we want to get those high cards as well. And then those 10 value cards also will cause the dealer to bust when they're hitting on 12 through 16, right? So 10 through ace, you know, those five cards, the denominations, those are good for the player overall.
So that's 10, time. Jack, queen, king, and ace. And the goal of blackjack is to get as close to 21 without going over 21. So as you're counting cards and you're going, for somebody who doesn't even know how blackjack works, when the dealer deals, once a hand is done, they just take those cards and they put them away, but they don't reshuffle every time. So they keep playing. So now you go, oh, wow, some of these cards have been depleted. So now we sit there and go, oh, a lot of lower number cards, the two, three, four, five, and six, a lot of those cards have gone out of this deck. That means there's going to be a 10, jack, queen, king, ace coming out of this deck. The odds are in my favor. Let me bet more. And hopefully if I get a blackjack, they pay you your $100 plus 50 time and a half. So you make 150 off of that bet. So that's what we're trying to do when we're counting. So then what do you do mentally?
So you're right. We have the high cards 10 through ace. That's good for us. Those each have a count value of minus one. And the reason it's negative is you have to think in terms of future probability. So the moment we get dealt a blackjack, that's awesome. But then that's two less high cards that can help us, right? Those two cards are gone forever for that shuffle, right? So as high cards are depleted, player advantage goes down, which is why the high cards are minus one each. And as you pointed out, on the flip side, the two, three, four, five, and six, and there's also, you know, five of those, right? Denomination. Those each are plus one because those cards, they favor the dealer, right? So the main reasons is that those are the cards that turn the dealer's bust hands into the winning hands. So anyone who's played blackjack is familiar with when the dealer has a 15 or 16, you're excited for the dealer to bust and then they pull that five or four and wipe out the
worst.
Table.
That's the worst.
Or as a player, right, it's going to hurt you when you double down and get a two, right? That's like the worst feeling, right? So as a player, as low cards are depleted, as they're taken out of the game, player advantage increases, which is why they're plus one each, right? And then right in between the low cards and the high cards are the neutral cards 7, 8, 9, which have a count value of zero because relatively speaking, they don't favor the house or player. But as a card counter, you actually don't even think zero, you just ignore them. They don't matter, right? You train yourself visually to become blind to the neutral cards. So all you have the high cards, right? 10 through ace, and then the low cards, 2 through 6. And there's an equal number of them, right? So at the start of a brand new shuffle, all the high cards and low cards balance each other out. They cancel each other out, which is why the count's at zero. It starts at zero at the beginning of a new shuffle. But as you can imagine, as soon as the dealer begins dealing, the count's like moving up and down. And it's gonna have a tendency to want to return back to zero, right? That's kind of its center. And so the further it ends up from zero, the more likely it's gonna return. So a card counter wants to take advantage of those positive deviations, because if the count's plus 10, that means like we've seen a surplus of a lot of low cards come out, which means there has to be, if we've counted correctly, there has to be more high cards remaining, right? And so we would bet more when there's more high cards remaining. And then as it returns back to those high cards are more likely to come out. And then that's when we get the blackjacks to get double down hands. And then the count will kind of go back to zero, right? Moving back to a neutral or house favored game. But for that, those windows of opportunity, that's when a card counter bets more to capitalize on that advantage over time.
You just reminded me of something. I'm going to let Tehran ask a question in a second, but you just reminded me of something. A lot of times people will be walking by a table and they'll kind of linger and watch. And let's say the dealer, gives the players that are playing at that table 2 or 3 blackjacks in a row. And the person watching goes, oh my God, this dealer's giving a hot hands to the players. Let me sit down. Maybe I'll get some blackjacks. But in reality, you should be thinking, oh no, she just depleted, or he just depleted a bunch of high cards. Once I sit down, I'm going to start getting the shitty 3s and 2s and 4s. So you want to avoid that table. You want to go to the table. Of course, you want to watch first, but you want to go to the table where more low, or you want to start betting more once more low cards have gone out. And then, and you're like, oh, now it's like catching a wave. It's like surfing. I'm waiting for that wave. And once I see, oh, wow, we're plus 10 in my mind. I've been counting. It's plus 10. That means there's a lot of high cards in there. Let me double my bet or triple or whatever the strategy is that you would do. Correct?
Yeah, it is like a wave, but kind of the opposite, because you want to bet the opposite of the wave, right? Like, so to your point, if a lot of high cards are coming out, it's not likely that they're going to continue, right? It's going to be the opposite. But yeah, you're right in a sense, right? You are betting the opposite of the wave. But yeah, to do the card counting correctly, you want to keep track from the start of a new shuffle, right? So you have access to as much information. Because if you could walk up to a table and start keeping count in the middle of it, but then you've lost that opportunity for all that past information that's there, right? So you want to start at the beginning where the count is zero. And then if they were to deal every single card, the count would end up back at zero, right? And then in between, it's going to like go up and down. And as a card counter, once again, you take advantage of those positive deviations when they're in your favor.
Tehran, what do you got?
Well, my question is in regards to the casinos frowning upon card counting, right? So sure, they frown upon it. When they block you, do they ban you from multiple casinos? I'm sure like certain ones, like Caesars owns a lot of properties, right? But even the individuals, do they call each other and say, hey, this guy's a card counter, block him?
Well, there's different kind of levels and different networks. So if you have like the two big casino conglomerates, as you guys know, are Caesars Entertainment. They have like a bunch of casinos right in the US, and then MGM Resorts is the other big one. So like at MGM Resorts, they're going to, their database is the same across all their properties, right? So if you get identified as a card counter, they're going to flag your name in the system. So even if you were to go and play on the East Coast at an MGM property, if you were to use your player card, then it's going to come up right away as a player that's been kind of banned from playing blackjack. So that's kind of, as far as those big two, they kind of rely primarily on their own internal database since they do have so many properties. Now, if you were to go to MGM property and not give a name, then they wouldn't really have a way of identifying you, right, as an advantage player off the top. Now, there are also, because as you guys know, there's tons of casinos in the U.S. So in different regions of the country, for example, maybe in a particular particular states, you might have Indian casinos that might between them agree to collectively share information. So that's kind of one type of network. It could even be a case of like casino next door, like in Tahoe. It used to be like that in Tahoe, because I don't know if you've been there, but the casinos are so literally so close, complete opposite of Vegas, right? Takes you like half an hour minimum to get to the next casino. But in Tahoe, literally, you can yell across the street. But I guess to further answer your question, Tehran, there is no universal, you know, database like there is, you know, in the legal system, right?
Sure.
There is none. There's just kind of like a mix and a match of like different networks and associations. So it is, as a professional, you are aware of what those are, because obviously MGM and Caesars, and it makes total sense, they aren't going to share information because they're like big rivals, for example. Sure.
So how many casinos are you banned from?
Well, there's kind of two. I mean, I've been like asked not to play, or 86.
Like that. That's great terminology. Asked not to play is fantastic.
Well, there's two different levels. Like there's most of the time when I'm barred from playing, they literally just ask you not to play. And usually they're pretty civil. They'll just say, oh, Mr. Aponte, or whatever alias I'm using, we've decided you're welcome to play any game other than blackjack.
Okay, so they do let you play the other games, just not blackjack. So they're like, hey, we need you to take this over to roulette because you're killing us.
Yeah, back in the day, that was the norm.
Sure.
In some select cases, if they wanted to be difficult about it, they could take it to the point of where they would 86 you.
Yeah.
They would trespass you from the property. So that's happened to me too. That was kind of a minority of the time where they lead you to the, you know, either your car or to the taxi cab line. Now, as far as an update for how.
But by the way, they pay you before you go, right? They give you the money that you've won. And
exactly,
then you
like. Yeah, usually if you want to get paid, they'll cash you out. Sometimes I remember, like, funny story, when I played in Biloxi, you know, Gulfport, Mississippi. I think by the second day, like, they figured I had won a lot of money. That was the main reason. I think I had won like 70,000. And then they asked me not to play. I knew it was coming, right? You could kind of sense it. But they insisted, which, you know, I would have done anyway. They were actually civil about it. They trespassed me, but they were civil about it. But they said, oh, you need to cash out all your chips before you leave. And so it took a little while to count.
Why? Why would they make you cash out all your chips instead of thinking, you know, it's better for you not to cash any of your chips?
Well, they probably don't want me to come back and just not deal with it anymore, right? That's one thing. Yeah, that's kind of one way to approach it. I think most of the time when I think about it, when I did get trespassed from the property, they would ask you to cash out. Because they literally don't want you to come back. Like I remember the first casino I was ever trespassed from was Caesars in Las Vegas. Yeah. This is like a whole other story. That's when they figured out, like, there was actually someone from the original team that I played on had sold us out to the casinos and provided a list of players, and it was crazy. Yeah, that's like, there's this whole other history, because the first team I got that I got recruited on, it was an actual legal entity called Strategic Investments. It was a limited partnership. It was a startup. They raised $1 million. Really ingenious business plan of recruiting MIT students and then training them to count cards. But we talk about the art of the game in any profession so important. So the management at that time was really bad. They did a bad job in terms of recruiting and training and how to implement the strategy. I wasn't fully aware of all this because I'm brand new to everything, right? But I quickly kind of, in hindsight, it's so obvious. They were horrible business operators, as it turned out. So that team ended up dissolving because it didn't make any money. And kind of one of the final straws is when someone from the team sold us out, like to the casinos, right? And it was just a mess. It was a big mess. Then the next year, a new team started. It was a much smaller group. And then I was fortunate to get recruited onto this group. And we were just so much tighter. And then it was basic business principles, right? You want to hire or recruit the right people. We were super selective with our recruiting, trust being of the utmost importance, but then also having people that had street smarts. And because like everyone that goes to the, as you saw, Maz, the math and card counting is not complicated. It's middle school math. You do have to practice it.
Yeah.
And anybody, the average person can count cards if they practice. So certainly anyone from the MIT community is way more qualified as far as the math part of it. But having gone there, and I love it, MIT, and I'm a nerd at heart, but most people that go to MIT don't have the street smarts or the moxie, you know, to blend in and to be that cool under fire, right? Because you have to be believable, because we were young, like that wasn't working in our favor, right? To be, you know, young 20 somethings don't usually have that type of money. So, but that's something that's kind of quality I had that made me a natural for it. Like I don't get nervous, kind of the way I care. And I'm a very aware person. Like I'm very aware of my surroundings without appearing to be so, which is really important. And so those are the type of people we kind of really look to recruit the second time around, right? Just being cool. And here's the thing, like card counting is 100% legal. Like I never got it why people, we would have certain recruits that were so great technically, but they would get so nervous. And I would think, why are you so nervous? Like, this is completely legal. Like, yeah, what's the worst thing that
you'll
can
get
happen?
Banned. You'll get banned from a property. Like, who cares? You weren't going to casinos all the time anyway.
Exactly. So like, and that is the worst thing that can happen, is that they ask you not to play after you've won a lot of money.
By the way, the casinos are, you know, they've stacked the deck, pun intended, in their favor. So why not be able to take the other route, like you said, strategically, and stack the deck in your favor? But I will tell you this. I'm pretty good with math. And when you and I met and you were showing me as the cards were coming out, the reason I started getting a little nervous about trying to keep track of the cards was because the speed with which they were coming out. I was like, but you gave me a good technique, which you teach, which is if you see a high card and a low card, when the dealer deals the hands, let those two cancel out. That's 0. 7, 8, 9 is 0. And then just count the pluses and the minuses and then keep track as you go. So I think at like anything, the more you practice, the better you'll get. Now, a couple of things that they show in the movie that were interesting is, one was, did you guys get into different outfits and fake mustaches and change your character and identification? And also, tell us a little bit about this thing of like how there's these guys who go, the team members go sit at a table, count cards, bet normal dollar amounts so nobody knows. And then when the table is hot, meaning like there's a lot of high cards are coming out, they will signal you. In the movie they show, the signal was like the other members would put their hands behind their backs. So you're walking by, you pretend you don't know them, you come sit down. And then they'll say something like, wow, man, it's really sweet. And sweet means the count is sweet 16 plus. So you had all these words that would tell the guy who just sat down, who's going to bet big, how far up we are. So they're passing the baton. So explain those two things, if you would.
Yeah. But yeah, and everything you're talking about, Maz, is that's the art of the game, right? And that's really differentiated us from other teams, was just I think that first team failed, strategic investments. The second team, we addressed that recruiting, right? So people that we trust, but then also have that street smarts to execute the art of the game. And the second thing is our training. We made our training like 100 times harder so that we knew, like, so that once you made it through our training on the second team, like playing in the casino was a piece of cake. Like in terms of actually counting, it was actually slow and easy, which was a good thing because you wanted to have the bandwidth to pay attention to what's going on, be able to talk. That's really important. Most people on strategic investments, they certainly couldn't carry a conversation when they're playing. They're like, you know, burning holes in the cards, right? Just staring at them. And then, and this is one of the biggest oversights on strategic investments, that first team I played on, we never played as a team. Isn't that crazy? We only played individually. So the second, our second team, I like to refer to as the bringing down the house team that the book and the movie was based on. We only did team play because the team play is a lot more efficient, right? But then also it has a great art, it provides a great cover to the game too. But going to how the team play worked, so we had two roles. The first role was a spotter. And so the job of a spotter was just to go into casinos and then keep track of the count from the start of a new shuffle. And a spotter really wanted to blend in and be completely inconspicuous, right? Not, you know, just look like your, you know, average Joe Schmo. Ideally, in the beginning, our spotters would just, they wouldn't even play. They would just stand behind the tables and watch, right? Just be like a bystander. Mm-hmm. And now when the count rose high enough to the point where it became favorable, they would then signal that it was a hot shoe. And here was the signal for the hot shoe, is crossing arms in the front, right? It wasn't that ridiculous one they used in the movies. Like, that looks, yeah, that was one of the many inaccuracies in the movies. Like, that looks so silly and obvious, right? Crossing behind the back. But yeah, this, people do this all the time. And so as soon as they signal the hot shoe, then the big player would come over, and I played the role of a big player. So then I would come over to that table, and when I entered the table, the spotter and I were careful not to look at each other and make eye contact. And then the spotter would then pass off the count verbally using a code word. And so you referred to one of them as a sweet was a code word for 16, right? So very obvious associations. Football, that code word was for the number 11, 11 players on offense and defense, right? So at that point, let's say it's football, then I know the count's 11, and then I could sit down and then bet accordingly. And then the spotter would then just walk off to find another hot table, right? And then you'd have multiple spotters, right? So just imagine multiple spotters floating around. You're going to get way more hot shoes per hour as compared to a big player playing solo, right? Your sampling rate goes way up. And the second part of it, which was really critical, it provided this incredible camouflage, because when we first started doing this, like when I jumped into the middle of a hot shoe, they never thought I was counting, because how could I possibly know what the count was? Like, I just came from nowhere, right? So it was like a double whammy. Like, we really boosted our mathematical expectation, right? But then also it was the perfect foil to the casino perception, right? As far as card counters, traditionally they sit there from the very beginning, bet small at the very start, and you know they have to sit through the whole shoe. So yeah, that team play was really, yeah, that was so critical. And in essence, we became like a micro casino, where with the team play, when you have multiple players being supported by multiple big players being supported by multiple spotters, we're going to get more play in and get to the long run faster, so that our advantage is going to be more probabilistic to be realized in terms of, you know, the profit's going to match the expected win. So that's the same thing casinos do too, but casinos get to the long run in one day, right? It's so many tables, 24/7.
How much money did you make, you personally? How much money would you make every weekend? Like, not as the team, but how much did Mike get to take home every time, allegedly?
Allegedly. Well, I don't know. I guess we kind of agreed. We're kind of more comfortable just talking about how much we made collectively as a team. And we had a good run for about 6 years. And then we won we won well over 10 million in kind of the 6 years until we got to the point where like the key players such as myself were
just banned from everywhere.
Yeah, we were very well known. Like, we had a big impact on Vegas. Like, they completely changed the way surveillance operated. And, you know, a lot of success in life, as you guys know, is you have to be kind of fortunate. Like, there has to be good circumstances and then you capitalize. So one of them, we were fortunate in that when we started, and people can easily forget this because casinos, it seems like they've been around forever, but it wasn't that long ago where there weren't that many casinos. Like in the late 80s, early 90s, it was Vegas and Atlantic City. That's it. And then Tahoe. That's not that many places to play. But then what happened is all the Indian casinos started to proliferate, all the riverboats. Even Vegas like took off. They started building all these new properties. So when we were the beneficiaries of having so many more places to play, that was a big factor in why we were able to win a lot of money, right? A lot more opportunity. Also, it helped us in that you had so many, with this explosion in growth, they had so many employees that were brand new that didn't have any experience, didn't know the first thing about card counting, right? So, I mean, that casinos now are way more knowledgeable about card counting than they were, you know, back then. So those were kind of the big factor. And then obviously we did a really good job of kind of taking advantage of all of that just through the good old fashioned, you know, practice and execution.
So let me ask, I could go on forever with you. I love this kind of stuff, but. So your background was, from what I've read, you traveled, you know, growing up, you moved a lot. You were valedictorian of your high school. So you're clearly a smart individual. You go on, you do this. You don't even know it's an option going into college, which taking this now out to the bigger picture for anybody who's listening, you know, there's a million ways you could make a living and live your life. Because I think a lot of people, especially coming from immigrant backgrounds, they think, oh, lawyer, doctor, engineer. There's a million ways. You never even knew card counting was a thing. And now you do this for 6 years. You guys make $10 million as a group, as a team. Now you are a gambling expert. You have MikeAponte.com. What's the future hold for you? And what happened to the other players? Where did they end up doing?
Yeah, great question. So like the other players are doing different things. Like one of them became, he actually bought a meat packing plant that wasn't doing that well. And he like turned it around and has his own line. And so they're, yeah, it's just a number of different things, but they're all kind of doing well in their own right. And I think I'm the one that's most tangentially still associated with, tied in with the blackjack, like with the, you know, with kind of through speaking events, and I do private training for high net worth gamblers. So it's a great way for me to kind of to stay connected in that sense. But kind of going back to like, yeah, like in life, you never know. There literally is like actually even more than a million different paths you can take. What's interesting is that, you know, back, Moz, when you and I were young, you remember this. Things were a lot more like slotted, right? As far as like the careers you're supposed to go into, and even like the what intelligence was defined as, right? Yeah. Now we know there's like so many different types of intelligences, which are, we were taught, and I was just referring to one, like a lot of the people at MIT didn't have that critical type of intelligence to be successful, right? There's the soft skills, for example, social intelligence, are really important. But looking back, it's funny, like even in high school, when I was clearly on the academic track and I wanted to go to a really good school, deep down, I kind of always knew that I didn't want to have a 9-to-5, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, I kind of knew I wouldn't have a 9-to-5 job. I had no idea what it was going to be. So that's another reason why the card counting was, I was so tailor made for it. It was like, I was just wired for that. It was like a great combination of both, like, okay, I can use my math ability. I'm very socially kind of aware. And it was also very entrepreneurial, too, because we ran it like a business. Most people wouldn't, you wouldn't get that sense from the movie, which was completely Hollywood, right? But we really, we kept strict records. We had team policies on everything and on investment return and compensation. So it was, for me, very, it was very meaningful in that, number one, it was my first real life application of mathematics. Because it's one thing to study something in a book, right? But to see like in real life, like, oh, wow, expected value or risk, like risk is a very intangible term, like to understand that, yeah, something can be a positive, have a positive expected value, but there's risk, right? There's a lot of fluctuations, right? So I learned a lot kind of in that respect. I learned a lot about business because our team kind of changed over time. It's funny how when you have that initial group of people that are really hardcore, as you start to grow, like it's hard to retain that culture, right? Because you have the newer people that come on, they kind of have it easier in a sense, if that makes, you know, like, so I learned a lot about human nature, kind of growing a business as well. And then over time, like as years and years go by, I kind of carried some of these things into like, I try to integrate them into my general philosophy. Because, you know, when I look back at card counting, I think one of the reasons I loved it was that when you're playing in a casino, it's all about the process. Like you're just like in the moment and it's about the process, right? So you have to be focused. It's about keeping the count, right? You can't lose focus. You can't, you know, take a break. And so it's all about focusing on the process, which I love. And then when the count moves in your favor, and then you put out the big bets, you actually at that point, even though you had the advantage, you don't have control over what's going to happen. I think it's a great metaphor for life. It kind of, looking back, you know, control what you could control. You could control having the perfect count, control putting out the big money, but the dealer can get blackjack too, or the dealer can pull, you know, you could end up busting on your hand. And I think it's something that I've tried to incorporate because I naturally have a perfectionist streak, which has kind of plagued me in my life. And I've gotten a lot better at like control what you can control, enjoy the process, and then, you know, the cards will come out as they will. And if you're doing the right thing enough times, then things will kind of, you know, pay out for you.
You're absolutely right. It's like, I use that. I tell people that in stand-up. I go, we got to just, you know, we get on stage as much as we can. We get better and better and better. You just enjoy the process. Because a lot of times, as you said, comedians will get in their minds and be like, why haven't I gotten a comedy special? Why don't I have a TV show? Why can't, those are all kind of out of your control. You just bring to the table what you can bring. And also, I love the fact that you're an entrepreneurial person. So anybody listening to this should realize, in life, if you're entrepreneurial, you can be entrepreneurial with anything, whether it's with card counting, a career in comedy, a startup, whatever it is. If you have a passion for it and you found that passion, you can do it. And just briefly tell us, now that you've got MicahPonte.com, you're doing consulting, you're a gambling expert, and you're going to be launching a World Series of Blackjack. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my partner and I, we are launching the Blackjack equivalent of the World Series of Poker. So for those of you listening in or watching, like there's actually a blackjack, there's a tournament version of blackjack. And actually a number of years ago, I was invited to compete in the World Series of Blackjack. It was invitational for like 25 of the best blackjack players. And I was fortunate enough to win it, but they kind of kept it a closed entity. They didn't open it up to the public, right? Because that's what makes the World Series of Poker so great. Like you can have the Chris Moneymakers of the world. So we're looking to have, it's going to be the biggest blackjack tournament in history. We're looking at 2023 launch. And we're going to have the biggest, not just cash prize in blackjack tournament history, but we're going to have a lot of like luxury prizes and have the weekend be very entertaining and interactive, kind of have like headline entertainment, because blackjack tournaments as they are now, they're not really that exciting. And even the World Series of Poker, my partner's played in the World Series of Poker. He said it's not really an experience at all. It's like a big huge herd of cattle. They just tell you where to go. You play, but there's no sense of community. There's really nothing going on beyond the poker. We want to make it just as much about the experience as the blackjack. You know,
that's your entrepreneurial flair coming in. First of all, this game that you play, the blackjack with 25 players, I just imagine 25 dudes and women sitting around all counting cards and gaining advantage on each other. And I'm going like, how does anybody win? But you won. Secondly, I think Tehran and I right now, I think we'll agree. If you need someone to announce the games, we'll be there. We'll be like, he got a king. Oh, he busted. I can't believe it. What do you think of that? We'll be the Joe Rogan UFC fighting championship of your blackjack.
Now they have a team for the poker. They have the team. I forget their names. It's like, they got the two guys that are very fun and funny.
Those two guys are good.
Screw those
guys. Yeah. We do blackjack. We do blackjack. Mike, before we get into the end of the show, why were you white in the movie?
Well, I mean, it's a...
Hollywood took it. Did you know that was going to happen? Did they tell you, or did it just happen and you were shocked when you saw it?
Well, I guess there's this whole history of it, right? So there was one player on the team who, without the knowledge of anyone else, actually met the author of the book, Bringing Down the House. And then he wrote the book, which that kind of made our story public. It was a bestseller. Then they acquired the movie rights to it. They did contact me. It was Sony. They did contact me and they made a likeness of character offer, right? You guys are probably familiar with that. It was a very bad offer. Besides being very low, they wanted to own my story rights outright across the entire spectrum so that I couldn't even do anything else with my story. It was such an extreme offer, I didn't even bother replying. It would have been a waste of time. So I think that was part of the impetus for, and they deliberately made the movie very Hollywood in large part to protect themselves legally. Right. That was a big, they fictionalized it. And this is a very, to some, it might be subtle, but it is a very, it was a very significant conscious decision. Like the book, Bringing Down the House, the tagline was based on a true story. The movie, the tagline was inspired by a true story, right? Very carefully chosen words. So when people talk to me about the movie, I don't feel comfortable. The most accurate way to say it is like, yeah, the movie was based on the book that was based on our team.
So is the book in the book, does it talk about you, Micah Pond, like not either you or another person that's more similar to you, or is the main guy in the book also a white guy?
They made the main character in the book was the member of our team who was kind of the source of the information to the author. I don't believe he was white. I think they kind of, three of the main guys on our team were kind of mixed, like myself. Like I'm half Asian, half Hispanic. The same thing for, so I think that might have been represented okay. I mean, the book, there's definitely artistic liberty in the book taken, but it's far more true to life. And in the book, the Jason Fisher character, I'm comfortable saying, I mean, it was based on me and I'm comfortable saying it. It's not entirely accurate. Whereas the movie, to your point, Tehran, like there's no one in that movie that I would say, oh yeah, it's definitely based on me. And it was all by design just to make it, you know, totally Hollywood.
And I like that you just pointed this out, because in the movie, I don't think that references anybody being biracial. Like you just said, three of the people on your team were biracial, and I'm married to an Indian woman and I'm Iranian. So I think my kids will grow up and count cards and make millions of dollars. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, I mean, it's a good point, because also like most of our big players on our team were not white, because you guys will find this interesting. It's not an advantage. It's not an advantage to be white if you're a card counter. So that was one of the ways we were able to, get around casino perception. The fact that I'm Asian was a huge advantage when I played. There's no way I would have won as much money if I was white.
Why? Is that because they're thinking, oh, this Asian dude is some rich guy from some Asian, you know, some from whatever, Japan or something? Why is that the case?
Exactly. Because, if you've ever, anyone who's ever been in a casino, there's definitely a disproportionate number of gamblers that are Asian. It's a super highly coveted market. Like, casinos literally have marketing departments dedicated just to the Asian gamblers. So that was like a huge, and that was something I kind of leveraged, getting back to the whole art of the game. Like, I had different aliases, and then you have a cover story, and you only have to give them a little bit and you let them run with it. So I was typically like the rich son. And so I'm like, oh, my family's in real estate, import, export. Like, those things sound really impressive in someone's mind if they think you're rich. And then you just kind of let them run with it. And the casinos, actually, I would even hear them. They would even start adding details to like what I did or my family. You know how the human mind is, right? And but yeah, I was the rich kid from a rich family. And being Asian was a huge advantage. We actually only had one big player on the team that was Caucasian. Everyone else was Asian. We had one of our best players was Armenian. But he had this look where he could pass for like a lot of things. He could pass for Greek or Middle Eastern. And so that ethnic factor was very important. And to your point, Tehran, and yours as well, Maz, it was something that, you know, they didn't factor into the movie at all.
Amazing. It's funny because also that shows you like how little Americans know about other countries. So you can show up and be like, yeah, my dad's the king of Indonesia. And they'd be like, oh, wow, he's the king of, you know, whatever. It's just, oh, you guys, what a crazy story. I could talk to you for days, but I don't want to keep you. I want to go to the next round. And this section, just quick answers, quick questions, quick answers. This is called Back to School with Mike Aponte.
Back to school.
Mike, were you popular in high school?
Yes.
What did you want to be in high school?
An engineer by default.
Very nice. Very good of you. What would you tell your high school self if you could tell yourself one thing?
Ooh. Don't be such a perfectionist.
And you said earlier you were still dealing with that. Yeah. What other profession would you do if you could?
Oh, you would really appreciate this, Maz. Besides being a professional athlete, which is kind of the standard dream of every kid, I think like being a comedian is like a superpower.
I love it. And last but not least, do you encourage people to get into your profession and why?
I would only encourage people to get into like professional gambling if it's number one, it's something they have to have a true interest and passion for. Don't get into it just because, you know, you're drawn in by the prospect of making money. And have it also be something that you don't depend on. It has to be something you can do part-time, which is one of the great things about professional blackjack. In my opinion, it's the best part-time job. It's something you can't even do full-time if you wanted, right? You can't play 5, 7 days a week, right? It's not feasible to do that and get away with it. So really, I have to kind of center a lot of people that contact me, give them a reality check, is that, no, don't quit your day job. Don't drop out of school. This is something you can, it's a commitment, but it's a very manageable commitment that you can do part-time and have a lot of fun with and kind of supplement your income. But it's not something I would ever put all my eggs into.
Don't do it full time. Tehran, what'd you learn on this episode?
Send my kids to MIT.
that one I'd have to endorse. It's MIT is, I look back, it's awesome, not just because of the academics, but I really appreciate, it's just such an entrepreneurial place. It's very different than like, because I visited other schools like Princeton, Harvard, great schools, but it's a different vibe there. Like MIT, like birthplace of card counting, many like amazing
Dropbox.
Technological
the feats. Dropbox guys, the Dropbox guys were MIT. One of them was Persian.
Also LSD, I think was created.
So MIT, card counting, LSD, crack, meth. and you want your kid to become Pablo Escobar sent all his kids there. El Chapo, I graduated from
MIT. I learned on this episode is that card counting is not illegal. So when I go to Vegas, I'm going to go to the table, blackjack table, with a notepad and just count as I go. And I go, this isn't illegal. I'm just going to sit there and just go like a plus.
Well, they minus. Let you do that with Baccarat. You know, people take their card, their little cheat for Baccarat and they play.
Yeah. They'll let you do it at Baccarat because they know it doesn't help you.
It doesn't.
Unfortunately, they would not let you do that at blackjack, though.
Yeah. All right. So I'll work on it. Listen, Mike Aponte, you're such a treat to have on, and thank you for taking the time. People can find out more at mikeaponte.com. Look for the World Series of Blackjack coming your way. If you are a big gambler and you need consulting, this is your guy. He will coach you. And it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for being on Back to School with Ma Jobrani.
Back to school. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Back to School with Ma Jobrani. We hope you're enjoying it. We hope you're having fun. And we hope you're learning something. So make sure to let your friends know. Share it on iTunes. Share the clips from YouTube. Just get it out there. However you're listening, let your friends know to tune in to Back to School with Ma Jobrani.
Back to school, yeah.